Last time we had a chance to see the Gemara in Daf Tes and the Gemara in Shavuos, and the impact that Gemara in Shavuos has on how you read our sugya in Chulin Daf Tes. In the Gemara in Shavuos, this idea appears in several places. Gemara in Lamedalim, at the top of Lamedalim, Beis Masechah Shavuos, talks about the notion of Huchsa Kafra. If I make a statement in Beis Din, and then ultimately Edim come and are Makfish, Edim come and contradict what I said, so not only will Beis Din reject my claim, or reject the statement that I made, because two Edim are considered to be a far superior bearer, a far superior determination of fact, to the say-so of one of the Balei Dvarim, but more broadly, in addition to rejecting the content of what I say, I'm Huchsa Kafra. From now on, Beis Din is going to assume that I'm not necessarily a reliable person, even in other statements I might make, because look, I made this statement, and the Edim denied it. The Gemara, though, in the top of Lama Dalam Beis, has an exception to the concept of Huchsa Kafra. Right before the two dots, the Gemara has a situation. The fellow says, Reuben says to Shimon, I had handed you 100 zuz, a significant sum of money, at that pole. We were standing at that pole, and I hand you the money. So that's what Reuben says to Shimon. That a year ago, a month ago, a week ago, whatever it is, Reuben says, I, Reuben, handed to you, Shimon, this amana, 100 zuz, at that pole. What does Shimon say? Shimon says, rather than merely saying, no, I never got the money, Shimon makes a broader statement. He says, that's so false. You claim you gave me the money at that amud. I never stood that amud in my life. Lo avarti b'tzad amud zeme olam. I was never stood at that amud. Certainly, never got the money from you at that amud. Now, if Shimon would have just said, it's not true, you did not give me the money at that amud, he would have been safer. But of course he expands and says, I never said that about ever in any context. The Edim didn't see the transmission of the money, but the Edim saw him stand that mode in a different time. Nafke be Sahadi, the Edim come and say that they once saw him stand that amud. Right? So it sounds like he hopes the kafir. He claims he never stood near that pole, never stood that location ever in his life. Edim come and say that they did see him at that location. So it sounds like Shuhuk's a kafir, but the Gemara says that Edom said something more specific. So Nafka Beis Sahadi, Edom come and say that we saw him. He claims he was never ever at that amud. All he really needs to say is, it's not true that you handed me 100 zuz at that amud. But instead, Shimon is much more dramatic, and he says, I was never ever at that amud, for any circumstance, for anything, ever. And that's his way of very dramatically denying Reuven's claim that he had given him money at that amud. The Edom come and say, you were once at that amud. We didn't say in transmission of money. Well, you can't say you were never there. You were once there. Edom come to Beis Din and say, we once saw him relieving himself, urinating at that amud. So Rav Nachman says, look, Huchsa Kafran. He claims he made a statement to Beis Din that he was never at that amud. Edom say he was once at that amud. So you made a false statement. We can no longer trust what you say. And Amalei Rav Lev Nachman, Rav disagrees with Rav Nachman. Amalei Rav Lev Nachman, no. Kol Nilsa L'Rami Le Danish, other level of Adaite. Anything that's not on your mind, it's not significant, you might do and not remember. So Rav says that while it's true, Rav says, if the Edom came and say that he wanted something significant at that Amud, and he claims he did not, so they would say, look, you should have remembered that, and you claim and you're lying, Huchsa Kafra. But Rava says, the fact that he was once Hishtin Mayim, but Sadam Uzzah, that's not a very significant event, so he wasn't really thinking about it. So when he says, I was never a Sadam Uzzah, we would chalk this up to that was something that was in his mind insignificant, and therefore he didn't really remember. If he was once took his kids to an amusement park, and they were there at Betzad Amud for a few hours, okay, that was a significant event. He should have remembered it. But the fact that he stopped for a moment, Lahashtin Mayim, that's not such a significant event. not such a significant event, and therefore milsul ramile the inish lav adayta. That's a gemara. Shavuos is a gemara appears in more than one place. Shavuos appears in Bava Metzia, the same basic idea in a couple of different related contexts. So now the reason why this gemara in Shavuos in the halachas of Toin v'Nitan is relevant, Chosha Mishpat, how's that relevant to our sugya in Hilcha Shechita, Maseches Chul, in the first parak? Because Rashi, again, had implied that the fellow is the Eini Odeya, Hilcha Shechita, we can't eat a Shechita because he doesn't know that Shehiya matters. He doesn't know that Derasa matters, and therefore perhaps he did Shehiya, did Derasa, but he doesn't even know what to tell us because he doesn't realize that it matters. The implication being, we should point out, but if had we actually asked him, were you Shohei, were you Dores, if he says, no, I wasn't, it's okay, then we would accept it. And the Rajba had said, how could you say that? And this means, I left up last time, look at the Rajba inside. Rajba says, what do you mean? Even if the fellow does say, oh, now that you explained to you Shehiya and Derasa, wow, it's great to know, and don't worry, when I shechted this morning, now with the knowledge you just gave me, the Shechita is still kosher. So the Rashi says, how could Rashi imply that that works? If he doesn't know, so then even if he says Barili, that's irrelevant. We saw that the Rashi says it at length, the Ramban says it at length, the Ran says it more briefly. He just says, even if the fellow says Barili, the Shachata Tiyafa, now that you taught me Hilcha Shechita, I didn't know the Hilcha Shechita when I shechted, now that you taught me Barili, Shachata Tiyafa, the Ran's quotes, the Rashi and others, that's no good. As the Mordechai points out, let's take a brief peek in the Mordechai inside. As the Mordechai points out, and other Rishon point, the Rashi doesn't explicitly reference this Gemara, but his contemporary, the Mordechai, does. Very, very end, after the riff from the Ran, the very beginning of the Mordechai, it's daf Aleph Amid Aleph. The Dapi HaMordechai, right after the riff in the Ran, the Tovkuf Ayin Vav, in the middle of the first column, Simon Tovkuf Ayin Vav, he says, Afilu Amar Barili Shlo Shehisi Lo Dorasti in the Kach Klum. Why? It doesn't help. Like Ezra Rashba says, Kevin Shebashas Shechita Lo Yoda Le'izdahure, because now in retro, he's looking back at that time and saying, well, now that I understand what Shehiya is, I didn't do Shehiya. But at the time, he wasn't attuned to it, at the time of the Shechita, at the time of the event. And the Mordechai explicitly quotes, Kidam Rinam B'Shvuas, Kol Misla Rami Le Dinish, La Vadayte. So he gives you the Psak, Chad V'Chalak, no pun intended, but he gives you a sharp, clear, crisp formulation of the Din, and, as Iran does, and he adds explicit reference to the Gemara and Shavuos, which presumably was in the back of the Rajba's mind. And earlier, in Tovkuf Ayin Dalet, he also approaches this from a somewhat different angle. Kol Tabach She'ena Yodei, a couple lines earlier, Tovkuf Ayin Dalet. Kol Tabach She'ena Yodei Hilcha Shechita, Pirsha Rulei Ben Eliezer Mimitz, one of the early Ashkenazi Rishonim, one of the early German Rishonim, the Sefer, he wrote a Sefer Yerayim. Sometimes we call him the Yerayim, that's the name of the Sefer, Yud Reish Aleph Yud Mem. Sometimes we call him the Re'im, that's short for Rabbeinu Eliezer Mimitz. They sound very similar, so it's hard to know which one we're saying, but the Re'im wrote the Sefer Yerayim. So Rabbeinu Eliezer admits, the Re'im writes the Sefer Yerayim, and it means, what we mean is, the guy doesn't even know the Allah is big. And he makes a point, which again, this is a larger conversation in the Sugya. We showed him to discuss, how much of Hilcha Shechita do you need to know? You mean you know to list the five? There are a lot of details. There are many sugyas in the second parak about Shehiya and about Derasa, so on and so forth. How much you have to know? So the Rebbe said again that there could be different versions of this, but the Rebbe makes an interesting point. He says, it can't be that we need you to know every last detail in order to be a kosher shochet, because Gam Chacham Nistapkim Lehu, Kama Milsa B'Hilcha Shechita. There are many open shilas in Hilcha Shechita. Even if you spend a year and a half learning the first two prakim, Be'iyun, with the Torah Beis Yisrael Shulchan Aruch in the works, there are open sveikos. So he says, here Hilkach, and here he gives you a concept which is relevant here and is relevant more broadly in your life. Hilkach, ein sarach she'eta kol dikdukan, ach she'eda lasei slave v'shino yishchita v'lush ol asfekam. You might, you don't have to know every last detail about those, but you have to know the basics and know enough to be able to ask intelligent questions, to be able to ask intelligent shilas, to know enough to know when you need to ask the shila. You've heard that formulation in the past, to know enough to be able to ask a shila, so it's good to know that that's not something that someone came up with 20 years ago. It's a Mordechai, it's a Yerbalez Remix. That notion of knowing enough, I may not know every din, but at least I've learned enough of the halachas that I know when to ask a shayla, and I can ask an intelligent shayla. I'm sensitive to know what I have to even stop it on, and to know what are the data points that I probably want to prepare in order to ask the shayla well. So that's already a concept that appears here in the Mordechai. But when all the, and halacha l'maisa, so again, we have yet another Rishon who lines up with this Rashba against Rashi. If you look in Shulchan Aruch, in Simen Aleph, the very beginning, Simen Aleph is all about the opening topic we saw earlier in the year, the opening topic of the Masechta. Who is Kasher to Shef? And it goes through a whole series of individuals. See, here you have Simen Aleph, Sif Gimel, you have it in front of you. Shulchan Aruch says, right over here, me, Sheyodim bo, Sheyni Odei El Tashita, we know that this fellow doesn't know El Tashita. Afilu Shachar L'Penayim Dal Hei Pavim, Shchita Haguna Uru Uya. Even if he shechted several times of absolutely proper shita, we observed it, but that shachar achar beno ben atzmo, but subsequently after we observed him shechting properly, but he doesn't actually know the hilchos shita, he then shechted privately without observation, without mashkiach, shchitasa psula. That's our gemara. So far, no surprises. That's our gemara. But then the shemar goes on to say in the next page. The sif continues. Even if we asked him, well, did you do it like this, you do it like that, when we talk tshuva, so near shashacha kiroi. And from the conversation, it sounds like he did a proper shchita, ein l'smocha. That's not good enough, can't rely on that if he wasn't observed. And then even further, even he says, I'm certain that I shechted appropriately. That's not good enough. And the Taz tells you, right here on the inside Rashi position, Oschess, the Ches of the parentheses, to the Pirish, Acher Shalomad, Omer came, after we taught him Hilchos Shechita, first he shechted, then we taught him, and then we asked him, so how did that Shechita earlier go? And he says, yes, it was fine. Hatam, once again, quoting the Mordechai and others, called Lutar Amel Dinish, La Vadaite. The Taz is not telling me something, he's putting the pieces together. And he's bringing the Rishonim back onto the page of Shulchan Aruch. Now, and the Shach says it as well. The Shach is even more explicit. The Shach on the Tosfos position, he's based. Pirsh kishasholim osa. We ask him afterwards, and he says, yes, barili, I did it well. We told Shavosa, nirlon shashochet kiroi, pshita shenoflo. Not only if we had a conversation and it sounds like he did it well, that doesn't work. I feel I'm barely shasisi. Call Mashet Tam Shalom. He says, I understand what you're telling me. I understand the deem you just taught me. And I am certain that I've not even realizing, but in retrospect, yes, I fulfilled all the conditions you just mentioned. Mikol makom yakshu b'shashkita lo yada lav adayte. V'sover sha'asa mashasholom. Right, that key one. That is, he may think that Hitaka wasn't Shohei. He may think, I understand what you're telling me about Shehiya. I'm certain that I didn't pause. That's very nice that you're certain, but that's not reliable. Not that we think you're an intentional liar, but we don't think you're lying now, but we don't trust your present assessment of past events. Because, once again, okay. So again, Gemara and Shavuos apply to the Cheshita. Very good. And now we're left, it's okay, it's not surprising that the Shulchan Aruch paskins like Rov Rishonim against Rashi. We are left wondering, though, what's Pshat about? What's Pshat and Rashi? The Rashba and Rabban had mentioned there are some anonymous other Rishonim who agree with Rashi. We're not sure, some Baal HaTosis or another. The Rambam, take a look at the Rambam does have a sort of an interesting middle position. He says it's you look at the beginning of Perek Dalet, the Cheshita, if you saw, he says, Hareza Karov L'Safek Nevela. It's close to a Suffolk Nevela. That's a little bit lukewarm. It's not really a Suffolk Nevela. It's close to a Suffolk. What's close to a Suffolk? Sounds like it probably is okay. Treat it as though So Rama already also is Rashi-like in saying we're not 100% Mesupakim. Okay. But certainly, Rashi seems pretty clear, and it seems pretty shver. Not just because many Rishonim disagree with him, Rashi doesn't have to follow the Rishonim. But again, Rashi is shver because he gets the Gemara Mishvos. Gemara Mishvos says, Mitzvah Adonai Dinish, Lava Daite. What's shot in Rashi? I think the solution to Rashi might lie. The Prima Gadim has an approach to Rashi, a difficult approach to Rashi, Jaisa Drabanim. I think that another solution to Rashi might lie in the comment of a Nodi Yehuda, looking at another place in Yaredeya where Milsa Ramele de Inish Lavadaite does or should have shown up. And that is in the Halachas of Bas Bechalav. What we really want to see is Simin Tzai Dalet Tzif Zayin. That's where the issue, where the rubber hits the road, where the issue of Musa Inish ought to be coming up. But for background, in order to appreciate Tzif Zayin, we need to know first a little bit about Tzai Dalet Tzif Aleph. So let's back up actually even a little more than that. The notion of Tam Ke'ikar. This is something we've spoken about, but let's just review again. The Torah gives us a list of 20, 30 different items, which are machalos asuros. A Jew is not allowed to eat arla. A Jew is not allowed to eat basa b'chalav. A Jew is not allowed to eat the flesh of a non-kosher species, besar behemet tamea, dog tame, and so on and so forth. A Jew is not allowed to eat nevela. Then, but the question is, okay, but let's say I put a piece of nevela or a piece of behemet tamea into my chant. You want to spice up the challenge, you added some bacon. Not fake bacon, actual bacon. Pig meat, chazir. The bacon from a chazir is absolutely a lot of dorais. Bisar behemoth to me. Okay, but I say, look, I'm not going to eat the bacon. I put the bacon in the challenge. It gives a nice meaty flavor. It gives a lot of nice twang to the challenge. And then I'm going to remove the bacon. I'll stir the rest of it. We're not going to actually eat the basar behemoth. What's the problem? I'm eating barley, I'm eating beans, I'm eating chal, I'm eating potatoes. It's not that basar behemoth today. It's not a piece of pork. So the din is, even though it's not a piece of pork, the Tanam tells us in many Mishnayos, in the 7th and 8th Prakim, and 8th Prakim and elsewhere, that that's still a problem. If something absorbed the flavor of a davar aser, you can't eat something that even has just the tam of a davar aser. I'm eating a potato. The potato from the chal, it's not a piece of meat. It's not basar behemet tamea. It's potato, yes. But then it's potato that's flavored with basar behemet tamea. We have a rule of tam ke'ikr. The flavor is like the thing itself. If the pork itself, if the ham, the bacon itself is aser to eat, then something else with the flavor of the bacon, the flavor of the ham, will also be aser. That's the rule of Ta'am ki'ikr. The Gemara Pesachim also discusses where does it come from? There are various places in Chumash where it may come from. Most Rishonim assume that the Maskana of the Gemara is that Ta'am ki'ikr is Daraisa, based on some pasuk or another, a couple of candidates. Okay, certainly it's the din. According to the vast majority of Rishonim, the din Daraisa, certainly is the din, the Ta'am ki'ikr, that's something that a piece of food that used to be kosher, but it is infused with, absorbed the flavor of something treif, you cannot eat that either. Not only can you not eat a potato that was directly bolea flavor from a bacon, even if I fried ham and eggs in a pan for breakfast, and then I clean it out, scrub it clean, no residue left, and then that afternoon we use the pan to make a vegetable ratatouille. The vegetable ratatouille has no treif ingredients. It's just the squash and tomatoes and everything is fine. All the ingredients are fine. But it was made in a pan that was used several hours earlier for ham and eggs. So we assume that the flavor of the ham was nivla into the pan. And a few hours later, I use the pan again. The flavor of the ham is going to come out of the pan, go into the squash and the tomatoes. And I'm not allowed to eat the squash and the tomatoes because it was bolea indirectly the flavor of the chazir. That's true if we're dealing with iser and heter. The vegetables used to be mutter, they came also because they were bolea, the tam of the ham from breakfast. Or, in Simon Tzari Dalet, it's also true in the context of fleishiks and milchiks. that if I cook basar and chalav directly together, that creates basar b'chalav. So if I melt butter in a pan and I fry meat in that butter, that's mamash basar b'chalav. The flavor of the milk and butter got absorbed into the meat. Or even if it's a step removed. If I had a pan and I used it for eggs and cheese in the morning, then I scrub it clean, no residue left on the surface. Then I use that same pan later that day for salami and eggs. So I assume that the flavor of the cheese went into the pan in the morning. In the afternoon, it comes out, the milk and the flavor comes out, goes into salami and eggs. Basar b'chalav. Now, is there ever a solution? So there is a solution. Even if I directly, that's a Mishnah later in our Masechta, on Daf Kuf Ches, let's say a little bit of milk dripped into the chalmas. A fleshik chalm, a real chalm. A fleshik chalm, and a little bit of milk on purpose, by accident, whatever it is, even by accident. A little bit of butter slid in. Maybe we thought that it was part of our margarine. It turns out it's not part of our margarine. It's actually real milk with butter. The guy said, "Oh, I can't believe it's not butter." Actually, it is butter. So that's the Mishnah Kupchas coming out. Tipas chalav shenav alachatifa. I have some milk that drips onto meat. So the Mishnah says, is that automatically basar b'chalav? But there is a solution. It could be there's so little milk and so much meat that the milk is batel and becomes insignificant, and everything just remains kosher fleishim. What's considered insignificant? So the Mishnah says, well, there's no taste. If it's so diluted, so little milk, so much meat, you can't even taste the milk, that's not tam keker, there's no tam. And the Gemara says, practically speaking, we usually, and for Ashkenazim only, use the rule of thumb of shishim. We assume if there's a 1 to 60 ratio, if there's 60 times as much meat and other stuff in this pot as that drop of milk that fell in, so we're pretty certain that the flavor of the milk is so diluted that, you know, it's not tasteable, and therefore it is bottom. That's the rule of, again, tam ke'ikr, the concept of tam ke'ikr, and specifically, tam ke'ikr on the one hand creates an isser, on the other hand, tam ke'ikr also opens the door to an exception. If they can be bittel, if there's so much of one and so little of the other, that there's no tam, then it's not a problem of tam, and practically speaking, we have mishayir b'shishim, we look for 60 times as much. So as far as Shulchan Aruch says, sometimes we would rely on having a non-Jewish taster instead of having to use shishim. But let's, for simplicity, we're going to be working with shishim now. You ask him, do you taste any milk in it? I can't have a Jew taste it because it may be bas b'chalav. But a non-Jew is allowed to eat bas b'chalav. So the Gemara speaks about the possibility of asking a non-Jewish chef, could you taste this dish? You know, what flavors can you sense? A professional taster, the fellows who write the back label on the wine bottle, the people who can taste the currants and high notes of cotton candy in the fine Cabernet, so they'll taste your chalons, and they'll tell you, do they detect any high notes of butter? If they can taste the butter, it's a problem. If they don't taste the butter, not a problem. Lamasa, we don't rely, Ashkenazim don't rely on kefela, on the taster. We just use the rule of thumb of shishim. Now, so let's take that. That's again the concept of tam keiker, which leads to an iser, but also leads to heter aide bittel, and specifically bittel be shishim. That's true if you have directly a dab of butter falling into the chalent. It's also true if you have, instead of a butter falling into the chalent, I have a milk and a spoon. A milk and a spoon, I have a bubbling hot chalent pot, and a milk and a spoon falls into the chalent pot. Whoa! Let's say I might have used that milk and a spoon this morning to stir my oatmeal and milk that I was boiling on the oven. Mamash, a real milk and a spoon. It was bolea milk this morning. And now the spoon falls into the chalent. As Mama just said, vehicle for milchiks. It falls into the chalent. Is it a problem? The answer is it depends. If there's shishim in the chalent, connected the volume of the spoon, you're safe.
Can you make it shishim?
No. You can't add more of it. But pashtus, you cannot. So now, okay. So far, so good. So I have a milchik spoon falls into the flesh of pop. So we have to see. The milchik spoon has absorbed some milchik flavor. We're not sure how much. So we say, let's imagine the entire volume of the spoon is milk. Okay, that could be the 60, easily 60. If it's a full pot of chalent, you could fill a lot more than 60 spoons into that pot. The volume of all the chalent is 60 times as much as the spoon, 100 times, 200 times as much. The bottle, fine. But if not, if it's not so much chalent, it's a big spoon and not so much chalent, there isn't 60 times as much chalent as a spoon, then you need that. Then it's a trefa. Then it's going to be, I'm sorry?
The whole spoon?
Ah! So if the whole spoon falls in, then the whole spoon. But let's say the whole spoon didn't fall in. Let's say it didn't fall in. Shulchan Aruch and Sari Dalid, we would ask you to see, talks about not that the spoon fell in, but you were tochid. The opening lines of Siman Sari Dalid. Hatochid kat cholev is bikadeir shabasa. I stuck a spoon in. Meaning not that the whole thing fell in. It's a milchik ladle. I wanted to ladle out the chalent, and I wanted to ladle out the chicken soup. And I wasn't paying attention, I accidentally took a milchik leo. These things happen. It's actually not uncommon shiloh. There are other permutations that are even more common shilohs, but this is what we're told right now. I had the chicken soup, I had the chalent, mamish fleshik of food, I accidentally stuck it in a milchik leo. So we paskin, in Simon Sayyidal Sif Aleph, that you need shishim. Shishim of what? Shishim of the part of the ladle that got stuck in. So imagine this is a ladle. So I'm holding this part in my hand. So obviously I noticed that my hand did not get into the chicken soup. Right? I know, I only stuck it in up until here. Sure. I only stuck it up until here. So then we say, the dominant view in Shulchan Aruch is that then you look at the amount that went into the pot. The part of the ladle that went into the pot. You need 60 times as much chalent, 60 times as much chicken soup, as the piece of the ladle that went in. Okay. There's a sheet of parents who disagree, but that's how we possibly. And now let's take, with that in mind, let's take it again. Rule being, I use a milchik kli with fleshik food, I need shishim, 60 times as much fleshik food, as the volume of the part of the milchik kli that went into the fleshik. Because that's the part that may have been giving off its flavor, its milchik flavor, infusing it into the flesh. So if it's 60 times as much chalent, chicken soup, as that part of the milchik kli, don't worry, even if there was milchik flavor, it got diluted. Batel b'shish. So far, so good? Question.
Why did the whole volume? That was my question before.
Yeah, I mean, the part of the... Yeah, so that's the rule that appears earlier in Shulchan Aruch.
A little bit.
Correct. But because it's hard for us to assess how much it is, there are cases where we can assess, and then we do. I don't want to get sort of getting far afield here, but we'll get this later in the year when we get into Bas Bechol officially. But for now, because we're not sure, so as a rule of thumb, we say, well, it can't be more than the entire volume of the spoon. That's the maximum it can be. Then the Shulchan Aruch goes on to say, Siv Zayin, well, I have hot meat. I just took the meat off the grill. I just took the meat out of the oven. 160 degrees. Hot meat. I start slicing the meat. I'm so excited it came out well. I start slicing the name is Gevalt. I'm slicing with a milchik knife. I worked so hard to marinate this meat for hours. And then I was grilling it. And I sliced the meat with a milchik knife. Oh, brother. So does a knife have to be kosher? Does the meat have to go in the garbage? The focus here really, does the meat have to go in the garbage? The knife does have to be kosher, that's for sure. Does the meat have to go in the garbage? Or should we say, look, the knife is very thin. The meat is very big. So maybe any flavor that the knife might have given can't be more than the volume of the knife. The blade, skinny blade, batul bashish. So we say yes. Kol haticha asur in ein bashish miyagin makom asak. If it's a small piece of meat and a big butcher knife, and you don't have 60 times as much meat as the makom hasak in shechata chabasa, that part of the knife that came in contact with the meat, so then the meat is trade. But if it's a sizable piece of meat, and a skinny knife, then if you have shishim, you're good. And Shulchan Aruch said, how much of the knife am I even looking at? Only Malkam HaSakim Shachata Chabas. Only that part of the knife that touched the meat. That's what the Shulchan Aruch says. Now here's the problem. I'll take your question in a moment. Here's the problem. Unless your question is that the Shulchan Aruch is flying in the face of the previous Shulchan Aruch in our sugya, because the Taz and the Shach on the side of Shulchan Aruch both point out the Maharshal, who you may know from the back of the Gemara, he's a Chacham Shlomo next to the Maharshal. The old Maharshal also wrote a sefer on sugyas, independent sefer on sugyas called Yam Shal Shlomo, which is very often, he gets very involved in the sugya and halacha maisa. He often gets quoted on the page of Shulchan Aruch. So the Yam Shal Shlomo says, I disagree with Shulchan Aruch. You have to use the whole blade, because you paid attention to how much of the blade touched the meat. When you were slicing, you didn't realize it was a milchik knife. You didn't realize that it matters. You weren't paying attention. Big deal. You thought it was a fleshic knife. I'm using a fleshic knife, the piece of meat. Big deal. You weren't paying attention. Now you say, oh, I'm sure. Really? You now you're sure? If it's still greasy is one thing, but look at how much got greasy. Greasy. But you may clean the knife, and then you realize. So the Mashal says, hey, this is what I'm going to do in Shlach HaNaita. Shulchan Aruch, though, and the Shach defends, we pass like the Shulchan Aruch, two lines off the bottom of the Shach, Dimre Mechada Rav Iker, we pass like the Shulchan Aruch. If he says, I'm sure that I only use these few inches of a big long butcher's knife, but I only use these 3 inches. So the Gilyan Marashah on the side of the Shulchan Aruch says, what's going on here? What's going on here? He says, no, to be Yehuda, the Cheska Landau, the first Talmud Chacham we met this year, the first day of Shir, no, to be Yehuda Shubas raises this question. I don't understand. Shulchan Aruch, by us, we just learned Sif Aleph. Simon Aleph Siv Gimel in our Siv Hilchos Shechita says we pass like the Rashba like everyone else against Rashi. You can't say Bari Li Milzaram Le Deir Shlav Adaita. If you weren't sensitive to it beforehand, so that's a Gemara and Shavuos. But all of a sudden here the Shulchan Aruch Yam Shal Shlomo is always being consistent. The Shulchan Aruch and the Shach, they're jumping ship. All of a sudden here they say, yeah, if the guy says Bari Li, that's fine. What do you mean? Yom Shoshon makes a good point. Milso Ramele Yedinish, Labai Daite, Estir and Shulchan Aruch. On this very point. The Nevi Yehuda says, in the few minutes that remain, the Nevi Yehuda says in this Shuva, and the second page, in Yoradei Etin Yana Simet HaZayin, the very end, he says, you know what the difference is? If I'm doing it myself, if it's something I actually did, which is true in all three cases, by the knife and the fleshik, and by the shechita, and the truth is also the Gemara Shulchan, the person himself is acting. He said, well, it depends. Kimich al kalpan yodei shebeshum pam yeshchil bedavar yodei lu eichosem. The Yehuda says, Mr. Rabbi Yehudish Labadite doesn't apply by Basu Bechala, by cutting the flesh with a knife. You know why? He says, here's the chilak. The Yehuda says, I know cutting, dealing with meat and tools in the kitchen, I thought at the time that I was cutting the meat that it was a flesh of a knife. But I know that cutting meat is a halachically significant act. I know that sometimes it does matter. So even though I didn't realize that in this situation it mattered, but it's something that's more on my mind. As opposed to something, davar she'eino ma'ala, 3 lines to the bottom, alibo she'esh b'ze'eze kepeh de'beshum panim. He says, the shochet, who's ein yodei v'shchita, he never knew that it ever matters whether you pause or not. But the Jew who's cutting the meat with the milchik knife, he knows that there's an issue with milchiks and fleshiks and knives and both of hashishim. He just didn't realize that's relevant here. But he knows in his head that that's something that sometimes matters. So Mimele is going to be a little more aware. In other words, things lie on, who tells me, is this, Mr. Ramele's Danish lies on a spectrum. There's a spectrum between being absolutely aware this matters and being totally unaware. So he says, again, the Buddha says, the difference between Shchita and Bas Bechala is that Bas Bechala, I know that these are relevant issues, I just didn't realize that right now this is a milchik night. But I know it could matter. As opposed to Shchita, where Shalom Prasad like the Rajbo, over there, the guy Mamish has no clue that ever matters to do. He never learned Shihi in his life. He never heard Jaras in his life. And now, I think we can close the sugya by pointing out that what the Yehuda's Svara to defend Shalom Prasad like the Rajbo could actually be used to defend Rashi as well. Because the basic concept that he just put, the same way he drew a chilek between Bas Bechal and Shchita for the Shulchan Aruch, we could also draw a chilek for Rashi between Shchita and the case in Shavuos. Because although, let's take that svara and take it one step further. Because Rashi could say, yeah, the fellow didn't know the details of Hilchos Shchita. He didn't know about Shihi and Derasa. But he at least did know, at the very least, that Shchita is a halachically significant act. He knew he was being shochet an animal. He probably knew there are some rules behind the Shchita. He may in his mind have had less, obviously he had a lot less knowledge of what those rules are, but he, at least he knew that he's engaged in a halachically significant act of Shchita. And he may even have been aware that it's an act that's somewhat regulated. There's a definition. He wasn't shooting in the head. He wasn't cutting it somewhere else. He knew he had to do, nechira min hatzavar. He knew something. As it's still not the same as the Gemara and Shavuos, there was no significance whatsoever. It was mashtin b'tzad ha'amud. That's zero significance. Again, from a Darfaris perspective, it's inappropriate. But there was absolutely no significance to that act. So Rashi might say, yeah, the case of the Gemara and Shavuos, that's extremely lo ramle dinish. Mashtin b'tzad ha'amud. Who would remember that? But the concept of Yom Yehuda, we could apply with a twist to Rashi and say, maybe Rashi would say, look, Shechita is different. At least he knows that's a halakhic significant act. So if he says later, barringly, he was more attuned. He may have not known exactly what to be attuned to, but his brain was more in dry when he was shepherd. So now he could at least look back and say, oh yeah, now I know what she is, I didn't do Shechita. Whereas the Rajba and the other Rishonim and the Shulchan Aruch would say, even that's not enough. It has to be that you know what the rules are. Even if you didn't know, in Bas Bechal, you knew the rules, you just didn't know the rules apply in this context. You have to know the rules. Again, Rashi might say, along the lines of No Yehuda, even if I don't know the rules, but at least I knew that this was a significant act, and my brain was more attuned, I was more attuned to what was happening, I was paying more, paying far more attention, even Enyo Dehev Shchita is paying far more attention to the act of Shchita that he's doing, then the Mashtin, the Tzad Hamud, is paying attention to that. And therefore, once I was already more, my brain is more awakened to what's going on, so even though at the time I didn't know about Shi and Drasa, but Rashi would say, if you teach me later about Shi and Drasa, okay. So I can say, I was paying attention somewhat to that act. Now I know what I'm looking for. So with that new knowledge, I can look back at that event and say, I did not do Shi, I did not do Drasa. And Rashi would say, that's fine. If he says barely Rashi called, that's good. It's not the using the Yehuda's basic svara, though he developed it for the Rashba. Rashi could also say that svara allows me to distinguish between the case of Shavuos, where we say he cannot whereas by Shchita Rashi would say that this is more Ramele Dinish. He didn't know he was shechting, whatever that meant to him. The later knowledge can help him. In retrospect, halacha l'maisa, we do not pass on like Rashi. So, but I think the Yehuda's concept can be used to defend how Rashi would have explained his position.